Today's drug development landscape is fast-paced, rapidly evolving, and ultra-competitive. From AI and data-driven discoveries to the rapid emergence of biologics and other innovative therapies, there's an unprecedented opportunity to meaningfully benefit the health and lives of patients and their families. I'm your host, Chris Warren, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the inaugural episode of Behind the Breakthroughs, How AlMaC Powers Clinical Trial Success with Care, a podcast series that explores the secrets behind successful, patient-focused clinical trials. This three-part series will provide expert insights and guidance to help emerging biopharma firms navigate the many complexities of designing and running clinical trials that deliver drug breakthroughs that transform lives. We're fortunate to be joined today by two experts with deep and wide-ranging experience developing study requirements that build a crucial foundation for an efficient, flexible, timely, and patient-focused clinical trial. Our guests both work for AlMaC Clinical Services, a company that partners with drug development companies to provide end-to-end clinical supply chain solutions, including packaging, labeling, storage, and distribution for global clinical trials. With us today are Kirsten Christensen and Dana Berger. Kirsten and Dana both work as project services liaisons at AlMaC, which is just another way of saying they collaborate with customers to set them up for a successful clinical trial. As a quick example, both Kirsten and Dana help onboard new clients and set expectations with them about everything from how communication between stakeholders works best to what AlMaC's reporting structure looks like and what to expect around documentation and timelines. Importantly, they also communicate what their responsibilities are as a sponsor. So as we're about to learn, there are a lot of moving parts to address up front to ensure that clinical trials run smoothly and benefit patients. I'm eager to get started, so thanks for joining us, Kirsten and Dana. Kirsten, we're going to start with you. In my introduction, I mentioned the rapid pace of drug development. I think it'd be helpful for the audience to understand what types of companies are driving the innovation we're seeing and what that actually means for clinical trials.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having us. Here at AlMaC, we partner with a diverse customer base, including established and startup biotech companies. These companies are quite often made up of experienced professionals that are familiar with the industry and drug development space. But occasionally, we do work with groups that are brand new to clinical supply. In either case, these emerging biotechs may not have the robust infrastructure that we typically see with big pharma. Their timelines are critical, not only for getting subjects on treatment, but reaching their funding goals as well. And their product may be limited in both quantity or temperature parameters, sometimes both. So there's a lot of upfront support and education needed to determine the best strategy to meet their clinical trial demands.
Great. Dana, let's bring you into the conversation, and I'll do that with two questions. The first is, how well do you see emerging biopharma companies in terms of being set up for clinical trials before they come to AlMaC? And the second is, how would you describe the importance of getting the study requirements right from the beginning?
Thanks, Chris. Kirsten made a great point about the need to educate new customers and everything that goes into a clinical trial, because it's both a lot of information and unique to each trial. So let's start with the observation that emerging biopharma companies may lack the internal resources and possibly experience to even know where to begin when they're setting up their study. They may not know how to initiate and bridge communication between prospective CMOs, IRTs, and CROs. They also may not be aware of the necessary steps between submitting a request for a proposal and then actually awarding a contract. So navigating all of that is a lot of work. So how important is it to establish sturdy study requirements at the outset of a clinical trial? Well, think of the requirements as like the blueprints to a home. Just like you can't build a home without a plan, you can't run a clinical trial without establishing its requirements. So think about it. What would it mean to the cost and timeline of a new home build if you put up the framing, install the insulation, put up the drywall, and then you brought in a plumber and electrician? You have to go back and rip out all the work that you just done, and it's going to set you back. The same applies to planning for a clinical trial. It's also important to understand that the study requirements are key to understanding the goal of the trial itself and how AlMaC can actually help you achieve those goals. What services do you need? When do you need them? Where do you need them? How many subjects or cohorts need to be included? And what does that dosing schedule look like to achieve the appropriate data points?
Great. Thanks, Dana. Yeah, nobody wants to build a house that way. And we certainly don't want anybody to think that successful clinical trial requires a lot of reverse engineering. So we're going to do a little bit of education now. Kirsten, I want you to give a quick overview of some of the things that need to be addressed when you're developing the study requirements. We've mentioned study requirements a couple of times now. Let's educate everybody about what we're really talking about.
Sure. So people may think of project management really only kicking in once the clinical trial is in motion. But the reality is that good project management should actually start with the study requirements gathering and then flow into the delivery of the trial's milestones. There is a long list of details that impact the study. Packaging and labeling strategies can impact cost and time. There may be certain storage and temperature adjudication processes, which could impact site participation, even distribution into certain countries. Patient enrollment can also be challenging, especially for rare diseases. That can necessitate the use of direct-to-patient distribution or just-in-time manufacturing to encourage better recruitment and retention performance. These service options need to be considered when building the study requirements. Some trial sponsors will also want to venture into emerging markets like Africa and the Middle East, and that's because they seek more diverse patient populations and lower overheads. So study requirements also need to anticipate how distribution timelines and import requirements may impact their supply strategy. Another point to really highlight is the need to ensure that all contractors are working off the same requirements. As Dana mentioned, you know, you can't build a house without having all the contractors coming in at the appropriate times and working off the same blueprints. So in clinical trial examples, if an IRT system would be used, it would require a lot of extra work or cost if you had to rebuild your IRT system because something like the treatment types and unit measures weren't created the same as with your packaging vendor. So not only is it important to establish your study requirements, it's critical that the same requirements are shared across each vendor so that handoffs across the supply chain are as smooth as possible.
Great. Thanks, Kirsten. So I want to take advantage of your collective experience. You both worked in a wide variety of scenarios and trials and, you know, geographies. What are some of the essential pillars and common practices that go into developing study requirements? And I'm talking about, you know, study requirements that promote trial efficiency and agility. Dana, can you kick us off with that?
Of course. So let's start by answering the who, what, where, when, and why of what we're trying to achieve here. So let me be more specific. So think about questions like, who is the drug or treatment trying to help? What is the disease indication or the focus of the trial? And who are the key stakeholders? You know, besides the patient, we have to think about the key players that are helping to support the goals of these clinical trials. So we talked about contractors and the importance of making sure they're all on the same page, working off the same requirements, the same blueprints, if you will. Those are all stakeholders. They need to know what they're doing, what parties are needed to help conduct the trial, like CROs, IRTs, testing facilities. We also need to look at what's the strategy to achieve the desired outcome, and when do you want the results? Requirements will also need to consider where the trial will be conducted. Are there any regional considerations? You probably don't want to enter Ukraine or Russia at the moment, just given the political climate. So you have to think about where you can make up for that patient population that you would normally find in Ukraine or Russia. And always keep in mind why the research is important and how it will benefit others in the future. So answering these and some other questions can help develop solid study requirements. But making everything work always depends on communication. So going back to the home analogy, communication is the structural beam that holds up the whole house. You can't hold up a house without that structural beam, and I don't think you want to take a risk on that either. We've also found that it's essential to have a clear decision maker to avoid delays and other problems. And the five whys, working through those five whys, the who, what, where, why, and when, they can vary by country. So you also have to maybe think about the five whys, not only from a trial perspective, but maybe from a country perspective, from a timeline perspective. And you kind of have to consider all of those different wise to figure out how to pivot your strategy and accommodate these variations. I'd also like to add that I think it's really important to make sure that you have a really good relationship with someone who's familiar with regulatory requirements, because that's not really something that Alma can advise on at the moment. But a lot of regulatory things are changing in clinical trials. There's recently been new requirements for running a clinical trial in Turkey. So I think ensuring that you have a partner that can help advise you on regulatory requirements from certain countries, because that will impact your five whys and may actually impact your overall study. That's also quite important to keep in mind.
That's great. Thanks, Dana. Kirsten, how about you? What do you see as common practices that are valuable?
As far as common practices go, if a trial's starting in the US and the drug is still going through stability, a lot of time we'll advocate for single panel labels. Since the U.S. does not require expiry dates on the label, this strategy allows us to ensure the clinical supply is ready at a faster rate versus waiting for a booklet label that contains the U.S. country page. It also allows us to continuously update that expiry date as new stability data rolls out. So that just helps keep your material flexible at depot and at site. With a lot of emerging biotech companies, their drugs will often have only 6 to 9 months stability to start. So we have to keep in mind which countries have expiry restrictions on import when mapping out that country list. And that could also impact how your supply strategy algorithms are set up as well for when resupplies at sites are needed. We'd also need to take into consideration your enrollment rates in certain countries. All of that ties back to, you know, labeling and expiry dates on the label. So again, just a common practice to highlight is going with the single panel to start until we have a more robust stability data set to work with.
Thanks, Kirsten. So we're going to wrap up things here in a minute. And so I want to use this final question to be a bit of a teaser for our next episode. And that episode's really going to focus on all the intricate project management that goes into the seamless delivery of clinical trials. So with that topic in mind, how can the study requirements set up project management for success during the actual delivery of the clinical trial? Dana, I'd like you to kick us off with that.
Oh, Chris, everybody loves a teaser, so I'm happy to set us up for our next episode. So I'm going to go back to what I was discussing earlier about communication being that pillar that keeps the house standing, that structural beam. So in the study requirement phase, you really want to communicate early and often. You want to build the communication muscles and channels that ensure when the study requirements aren't followed exactly, which will happen, that the right stakeholders are informed and involved quickly. Being in this clinical trial space, we do plan for changes. So we're able to react quickly. We just have to be informed quickly. So you have to be committed to informing all stakeholders, because any change is going to have an impact across the entire supply chain. So ultimately, ALMAC is here to help support and bolster whatever resources and expertise companies lack internally. We've got a lot of services and very knowledgeable team members that can help establish these requirements and get them started off on the right foot.
Great. Thanks, Dana. Thanks, Kirsten. And now you have a teaser. So that's great. This is a really detailed and helpful look at the state of drug innovation today and how clinical trials fit in, and the importance of developing those study requirements that set a trial up for success. As we talked about, you definitely don't want to build this house without a blueprint. As I mentioned, our next episode will take a step ahead into project management and what is required to ensure seamless and timely delivery of clinical trials. And I think we are set up well for that discussion. I hope you'll join us for our next episode, but until then, take care. Bye-bye.